Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to ScaryCast. This is Dr. John. I'm solo tonight. Papa Stro and Devin are taking a well-deserved break, and I'm excited to be here. I've got one of my favorite people as a guest tonight. I've got Jackson Samuel from Australia tonight.
I'm doing very well, my friend. How are you tonight?
I'm doing really well. I'm glad to have you on here. It's been a real Bigfoot week, I'll tell you that. We had a wonderful Bigfoot and Company podcast this past Monday. Everybody, if you have a chance, take a listen to that, Bigfoot and Company. It's on iTunes, Spotify, Spreaker, TuneIn, and a variety of places. You can find it. And that prompted me to put together, I write the Bigfoot column for the Gray Area News. Now, I love it. That's the perfect title for a column about Bigfoot, the Gray Area News. And so I write the Bigfoot column about every 2 to 3 weeks. And this morning, I was reading a post by a very dear friend, Angelia Scheer. Angelia is the executive director of Tennessee MUFON, and she's just a great lady. And she's got a book coming out based on her over 30 years experience and over 2,000 interviews with folks who have had UFO experiences. So she said, John, read that and see what you think. And I liked it so much, I based the Bigfoot column off of it. So I thought tonight we would start our discussion, because Jackson's a member of BFRO, Bigfoot Research Organization, down in Australia. And Jackson, how long have you been a member of BFRO? It's been a while, hasn't it?
Yeah. I can't honestly say to tell you the truth, mate. I'd have to look up when I first joined. It's been quite a while now. It's been at least a couple of years.
All right, yeah, well, I think well over 10 years, hasn't it?
Yeah, oh, it's been a while. It's been quite a while.
All right, yeah, well, that's great, yeah, and I know they're very glad to have you with them. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to discuss this current issue of the Bigfoot column, and you can easily find it. You just go to bigfootcolumn.com, and you'll just follow the link over to the Gray Area News. And I was reading Angelia's article, and she said, and I would like to quote, "When you ask the wrong questions, no matter how sound those questions may be, the answers never come. You've got to ask the right questions when you're doing research in the paranormal." And it was very interesting. A friend of mine, Dr. Trey Donaway, sent me an article from the Orlando Sentinel, and it talked about how scientists are beginning to think UFOs might be real. Now, I found that to be just crazy. I mean, we've known UFOs have been real since the dawn of time, Jackson, haven't we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most definitely.
And then it says scientists are beginning to think that UFOs are for real. Now, come on. But that's okay. I'm glad they're catching up to it almost here at the end of time. But that's okay. And so I decided from this week's research and questions and talking to people and being out in the woods, 5 things came to mind, and I wrote them down. So, Jackson, here's what I'd like to do. I want to read each one of these little thoughts that I've got, and they end with a question. So I'd like for you to work with me to answer the question. How about that?
That sounds like a plan, my friend. That sounds really good.
All right. All right. Question number one. Philosophically, not really literally, but kind of philosophically, I just don't want to hear about another sighting. I mean, people go out all the time looking for Bigfoot, UFOs, and ghosts. And so much of the time, they never find anything. And then they'll have a sighting story. And it's great to hear them. No, it really is. I mean, I was saying philosophically, I think I've heard enough sighting stories, being them ghosts, UFOs, or Bigfoot. But you know, that's not really what we're looking for. We're not saying, well, what happened this time, or what happened this time, or what happened this time. What we might really want to start saying is, why is it only a few people ever see UFOs, Bigfoot, and ghosts? I have a sneaking suspicion, Jackson, that Bigfoot, UFOs, and ghosts, that they're all intelligent beings. And Robin McRae, who was on our Bigfoot and Company show, said, you know, Bigfoot wants everyone to see it. It will let you see it if it wants you to. Because I know that there are Bigfoot researchers who have been going out in the woods for 30 years and haven't seen Bigfoot, correct?
Most definitely, yeah.
Yes, I mean, they're going out all the time, they don't see it, but yet the most interesting and unusual people just go right out, they'll see have a Bigfoot sighting, or they'll have Bigfoot come up to them, come up in their yard. So why shouldn't we be talking to the people that are seeing Bigfoot rather than the ones that are going out and not seeing it? Why not? Why don't we really explore those who are having the sightings and try to find out why are they having the sightings? And why are these other people not having the sightings? Now, is that a crazy idea, Jackson? What do you think?
No, that isn't a crazy idea at all. Like, why waste your time just with, you know, people that don't see? Like, it makes so much sense. You know, you're wasting too much time, too much money running around and everything to go and see alleged sightings as opposed to people that have actually experienced it all. And going on to that point, you're saying, like, you know, that they want them to only be able to see, you know, only certain people see them. Like, I don't know, maybe they've got a sixth sense as well. They'd have to have a sixth sense.
Yeah, at least a sixth, like, sense. Maybe a seventh sense.
Yeah. Well, it's the same thing with, like, I'm not going to put them in the same league with canines, but, like, dogs can pick up on certain things. They can tell when someone's good or when someone's bad. You know, like if a dog comes to you, then the owner automatically knows that they are a dog lover. So it might be something that we give off, maybe in a pheromone or something in our aura or something like that. And if they don't feel threatened, then those are the people that they allow themselves to be seen by.
Right. So why don't we study?
Yes, there.
I totally agree. Why don't we study the people who are seeing Bigfoot,
yeah,
or having Bigfoot sightings or UFO sightings or whatever? Let's study them because they seem to be what's really important. Not hearing, and again, I'm not trying to be a bad guy. I mean, someone says, you know, I saw Bigfoot. It was about 100 feet out there, and we saw it walk between two trees, and we got this bit of footage. I'm not trying to put that down at all. I'm just saying we have tons of those. We're not learning anything from that. But what we ought to do is maybe start talking to the people that are having the sightings and see if we can classify them, see what the commonalities are for them. So I don't know. I think that's a reasonable thing for us to think about. Like my idea, yes or no?
I do. Like, it'd be good to be able to get the people together that are having the most common sightings and the most consistent sightings and be able to correlate with them and work with them to get more research done. I think that's a brilliant idea.
Okay. Well, thank you. All right. That's question number one from this issue of the Bigfoot column. Now here comes question number two. I talk about this, especially with Lizard Man. It's a principle called the minimum viable population. Now, I'm going to quote a definition of it. It's a lower bound on the population of a species so that it can survive in the wild, which really means how many of a species do you need so that it will continue to thrive? Now, the approximate number is 750. That's, you know, the approximate number. But now let me say this. If there were 750 Bigfoot between Pawleys Island, which is right near Myrtle Beach, and Charleston, down there in the Francis Marion National Forest, if there were 750 Bigfoot, my goodness, we'd be seeing Bigfoot all the time. Bigfoot would be crossing the highway. I mean, it would be, you know, and the same thing with any other forest. You had 750 of them. And it's a fact that Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to say there would have to be a very good possible reason for that. Might have to do with portholes. You know what I mean?
That's exactly
right.
They're
not always here.
They're not always here, but they're somewhere. And now I was talking with someone yesterday who does some research on portals, and they were talking about, well, there was a portal here in Clayton, Georgia. There was a portal in in Lake Michigan. There's a portal south of the pyramids. There's a portal in Sedona, New Mexico. I mean, Sedona, Arizona, I'm sorry. I mean, there's a portal all over the place. But you know what? I hear reports of portals opening up all the time. And I believe that since there does have to be at least 750 to have a minimum viable population, that these portals must open all the time. I mean, and perhaps those people who can see portals opening are the ones we need to talk to, and those are the ones,
sure.
Again, going back to question number one, those are the folks having the Bigfoot sightings and the UFO sightings and the ghost reports. So, I mean, this idea of portals, I used to think, no, that couldn't be that way. But I really changed my opinion, Jackson. I had one of your fellow members of BFRO, his name is Rick Rellis, super guy. He lives up in the mountains of North Carolina now, and he was referred to me by the She-Squatchers. And, you know, he's not the kind of guy that's just taking a fancy. And he kind of calls it like it is. And even he said, you know, John, the idea about Bigfoot being interdimensional and coming in through portals, that's a very reasonable idea. Now, what do you think about that, Jackson?
I think it is a very reasonable idea. And yeah, I think that is a very, very reasonable thing to follow. This has posed another question to me that I'm actually going to do research into now. Those places that you mentioned that portholes have been seen, I'd like to research and see if they're actually lying on ley lines. It's like if all these things, like, you know, the interconnecting ley lines around the planet, all the energy points, I'd like to see if those portholes sort of correspond with where these ley lines are. So I might do some research into that a little bit later. So
that'd be really
interesting.
Yeah, I think some of the major portals or stargates, as people like to call them sometimes, I think they really are on, in, and around ley lines and the intersection of ley lines. I would like to do, you know, maybe why don't you do some research and I'll do some research and we'll get together on Paranormal Down Under. We'll do that. Maybe we'll wait about 3 weeks for that topic, but let's spend some time and maybe we can find us a guest that knows a little bit about portals and we can bring them on. So maybe in 3 weeks, you know, maybe about the middle of April, we'll address that on our show, Paranormal Down Under. How does that sound?
That sounds great, mate. That sounds really good.
We'll certainly do that. Yeah, and I think, you know, I think when we're on shows like this, I think it's a good time to come up with ideas for other shows and all that. I mean, I think that's part of what I like to do. It's part of the active research guy in me. So now, here's another one. We live in what's called M4. That's the three-dimensional Cartesian plane and time. We call it M4 because it's convenient. We have the XYZ axis, and then we have time. So we call it M4. Now, Dr. Ronald Bryan, and I've got a picture, his famous picture that came from his paper. If you go to the Bigfoot column, you'll see that picture. And he talks about the parallel universes, how the universes are very, very close to each other. And they're only different by just a little bit. They're very close to being, it's like Jen Cruz describes parallel universes. It's like take a ream of paper and each sheet of paper is a different universe. They're all about the same, but they get progressively different as you get farther and farther away from the one you're in. And I think that's a very good notion, Jen. And I like that. You taught me that a long time ago. So I appreciate that. Jen Cruz being one of the She Squatchers and just a very, very nice lady. And I must give a shout out to the She Squatchers, Jen and Jenna. I was on their show last night, the Journey Radio show. And Jackson, I think you saw it.
I sure did. Yeah, I don't miss a single episode of the She Squatchers. They're a brilliant bunch of girls. They've got great hearts and they've always got feet to the ground and they come up with some brilliant stuff.
I like those ladies. They're great. So anyway, we were discussing the idea of, we have these parallel universes and then we have higher dimensions and lower dimensions. So you kind of have a framework there. But when a portal, let's assume that portals do exist, because I think because of the minimum viable population, you have to say that these entities, whether they're the Greys or whether they're the Bigfoot or the ghost, they have to be somewhere. So suppose they are in other dimensional planes. Well, but if a portal opens, now is it really a safe idea for us to walk into a portal? I don't think so. Our bodies are engineered for M4, which is where we are. You are sitting there in the regular old M4 in Australia right now. I'm sitting here in the regular M4 in Myrtle Beach right now. We're all happy. We're all alive. Our bodies aren't being stretched, pulled, who knows what. But going into a portal and going into a different dimension is not a good idea, I don't think. And there was, in fact, it's interesting, at Stonehenge in 1971, there was a group of tourists, and they were camping out there at Stonehenge, and they vanished. There was about 15 of them, from what I understand, and they just vanished. The cops came by the next morning, like they always do. The folks were not there. And they have never been heard from again. I mean, you got two choices. Either they were sucked up into a UFO or they walked into a portal. And if they walked into a portal, they may never come back. We've heard about plenty of people, disappearing and never coming back. I mean, you have those things happen in Australia, don't you, Jackson?
I have heard a few things like that around here. Not really that recently, but I have heard stories like, well, obviously not from the people because they haven't come back, but I have heard stories about things. I have heard stories about things like that. That sort of makes me wonder too. Like at the time of year when these people disappeared, like if it had whether it might have been a specific time of year or that the portal opens, or it might be on a timer sort of thing. You know what I mean? Might open certain time of year, certain solstice, whatever. And people just get really interested in, like, what's that? I've got to go check it out. And don't see them again.
I don't know. I think I'll go back home instead. I'll stay around here. It's like I've heard, I think the stories that I've heard about the most portals is in and around the Mount Shasta volcano in California.
Mm-hmm.
From Tom Cantrell, he's a Bigfoot researcher over there in Washington, and he's from the Mount Shasta area. And there are lots of people that talk about how Bigfoot comes and goes, how people just vanish, and it's just really scary. So the idea is, if a portal opens in front of you, I wouldn't go in. I'd step to the side. I really would. I mean, discretion is truly the better part of valor, and being able to come listen to you and me on Paranormal Down Under and not be in some odd dimension getting your body stretched and dying, that's not what we want to be. We you and I would prefer everybody not go into the portals and just listen to our show every week, right?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Most definitely.
I'm just being very silly. The next,
yeah, well,
the next
though,
question.
Though if I was to go into a porthole, I'd have someone standing on one side. I'd tie a rope around my waist, just in case anything went wrong, they could pull me back. But even then, you know, you're not going to be 100% sure you'll make it.
Well, let's hope they could. If that portal closes, man, they may not be able to pull you back out.
Yeah.
That rope. That rope could just disappear, and they could end up with just the end of a rope. Not a rope. So there you go. Anyway, all right. So that's another thing. Don't walk into portals. That may sound silly, but I don't think it is. Because I think with the number of sightings that we have of Bigfoot and the number of UFO sightings and the fact that the portals really could be all over, opening and closing, and I think it's just a matter of safety. Don't be so
Who's to say that – I was just going to say, who's to say that some portholes haven't been man-made? I mean, look at the Philadelphia experiment.
Well, sir, you have a point, and that brings up the case of CERN – The energy particle accelerator in Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, who knows if it's creating portals or not? Who knows? We don't know. We're just out trying to figure this out as observers, almost as tourists, I think. But anyway, you know, I think that's important. Now, another part of Dr. Ron Bryan, another thing I want to talk about Dr. Ron Bryan's article. That I have a copy of. In fact, there's a link to it. Link to it on the Gray Area News. You can go right over to ScaryCast and find it if you want. Is that the idea of the Mandela effect? You know, a lot of people mm-hmm. say, "Oh, that's silly." Well, no, it's not. Jackson, if you don't mind, I'm going to quickly go over the original Mandela effect story so that for those who really aren't familiar, so that they'll be kind of caught up. Is that okay? Do that?
Oh, that's fine. Please do.
Great, great. There were a couple of girls who were rooming together at Dragon Con, early in the day of Dragon Con, which is the great Comic Con down in Atlanta over Labor Day. And one was talking about how it was such a shame that Nelson Mandela had passed away because he could have done great things for South Africa. And her roommate said, "Well, Nelson Mandela is still alive." And the first roommate said, "Well, no, I remember seeing Nelson Mandela's funeral over the telephone. Over the television. And I saw his wife stand up and give a speech about him dying." She said, "No, that never happened. I mean, he became president of South Africa. He got out of jail. He did that. He's won the Nobel Peace Prize. He's done great things down there." And then they were able to find other people who saw Nelson Mandela's funeral on television. But yet there were people that had never seen it and had seen him receive the Nobel Prize. You know, they'd seen that on the news and everything. And that's why this was called the Mandela effect, because two people at a single point in time together had different memories of the past. That's what the Mandela effect is. Now, the one that everybody talks about is there's a little kid's book called the Bernstein Bears when I was growing up. Now it's called the Berenstein Bears. Bear and Steen, bear being because they are bears. And a lot of people remember it that it was the Bernstein Bears. I know I do. And that's just one of many, many examples of memories that we have that are different. It's just very strange. It's a very strange idea. And Dr. Ron Bryan's diagram of the way the universe is put together, you know, the Mandela effect works very well using parallel universes, because you and I can be in the same parallel universe right now, but we may have been in different ones earlier, and we may have had different experiences in the past. And, you know, I think that's something that's very important. Have you ever had a Mandela effect experience, personal, that was really stunning to you?
Yes, I've actually had a couple. I believe it comes down a lot to perception as well. How to put it into words? Let's see. Yeah, I've had things happen with, with people around me, and we've talked about it later on. We have completely different, we perceived what was happening so much differently, and it's like, no, this is what happened. It's like, no, that's, no, this is how it went. And it's like, no, that's, I don't know if it's just like, when something sort of gets you in the mind, it's, it just changes the way that you see things. And I don't know, really.
It's a really hard one to answer. Yeah, there's something that always happens when you interview 20 people that saw an incident happen. You will get 20 different stories.
Exactly.
And that's a fact. Well, and if you're going to get 20 different stories,
it's sort of like, when you, I don't know if you played a game. We used to play a game here as kids called Chinese Whispers. We get everyone sitting in a circle, and one person would say a sentence into, whisper it into someone's ear, and they whisper what they said to the next person's ear, and so on and so on and so on until I come back to the first person, find out that the sentence was completely different. Just a way that people perceive things, I think. The human mind is a brilliant thing, and everybody's different. Everyone perceives things differently, and everyone has different reactions to different things. So I can completely understand that.
Right. Well, so, we've got the parallel universe thing going on, first of all. And 20 people or an event. That's something that we've always known. So they all must have been in slightly different parallel universes. But now they've all come together at the same spot when they're being interviewed. So that's another thing. So we've got that going on. We also have the idea of the higher and lower dimensions. Now, in Dr. Brian, he talked about the fact that there are, you do perceive and you go up to higher and higher dimensions, but how do you get there? Well, the way he describes it, if I looked at it a particular way, and I've tried to talk about this with people. And what we figure is, the old idea of when you pass away, they always say, go to the light, go to the light. And people are always afraid to go to the light, but they need to go to the light because the light is a wormhole, I think. And it is a wormhole, and it goes up to different dimension, to a higher dimension. Now, from that higher dimension, I believe they can see us. We can't see them. And I think you just go through a wormhole, and you have whatever spiritual body you have at that point that's different than the one. Again, our body works very well here in M4. But I think when you go up, you can also see back. And here's a story. It's a story I like to tell. It absolutely convinced me of life after death. There was a lady, I was at her house, and she said, I really miss my father. And it was about a year ago. He passed away about 5 years ago. And about a year ago, I was standing in the kitchen, and I was just leaning over against the sink, and I thought to myself, Daddy, I miss you so much. I wish you were here. And she said, I heard just as clear as day, my father said to me, honey, don't worry. I'm right here. I'm just right over here. You can't see me, but I'm here with you. And I really believed that woman, and I don't think that her mind made that up. Now, of course, that'll kind of teach you better watch out what you do, because your parents and your grandparents and those folks who have crossed over, passed away, can see what you're doing. But be that as it may, there are so many people that have similar stories that it makes sense that when you pass away, you're going to go to that higher dimensional plane where you can see down like a one-way mirror, but we can't see back up to you. And That's another question/observation I have. I mean, with so many people having afterlife stories, how could it not be true? And, it's the old, scientists are now beginning to think that UFOs may exist. Now, come on. That's a little bit of a garbage article from the Orlando Sentinel. I mean, we've always known they've existed. People have seen them. And don't say that scientists are just now figuring this out. That puts scientists are supposed to be on the forefront of knowledge, not at the tail end. And I think if I were a scientist and I were associated with that article, I would be somewhat embarrassed that, you know, here it is 2019 and we're beginning to think that there are UFOs. That's, you know, I don't know. It's whatever. Your comment on that, please, sir.
I completely agree with you there, 100%. There's got to be so much more to it. It's just people are just being too ignorant these days. You know, they're not opening up to what's going on around them and that. And
well, you see, Neil deGrasse Tyson, he's a very famous astrophysicist.
Yeah. Oh, he's,
And people love him, and he comes on. He's a real rock star. He comes on and he talks, and all he talks about is the scientific method, and which is great. But he lives in a world where the only thing that he can prove is something that can be an experiment that can be repeated. I mean, you know, in his world, death is really a little bit unprovable because you die, and you can't repeat it. Maybe other entities repeat it, but you can't. So, in a sense, death doesn't exist in his universe. His universe is a scientific principle. And, you know, that's like that's saying you live in a flat world versus three-dimensional world. So, I mean, I think...
That's it.
I mean, I think we need to open our eyes a little bit more so that we can really understand what's going on.
Okay, well,
and,
Here's something for you, Dr. John. What are your views on reincarnation?
Oh, well, it's it fits in very well with that diagram from Dr. Ron Bryan. The way I see it is when you die, you go to the light, you go up. You go up to a different, a more complex world, or a more complex plane, and then at some point you choose, or you're allowed to, or you're forced to come back down here. And I think it's very simple. To me, that's a very simple but reasonable view of reincarnation. I mean, there are many times, and we've got a lot of instances of little kids talking about a previous life that they should have no knowledge of, and you go do the research, and really and truly, yes, there was a fighter pilot, that, and all these things happened to him. You got a four-year-old boy telling you all these things. I mean, there are tons and tons of those that are out there. So, I mean, I just think reincarnation, it makes physical sense with Dr. Ron Bryan's article and his thing. So I don't see any problem with it. I think it's a bit mechanical in terms of
it
just happens. And so
the way I see it, like I'm not a religious sort of person in a true sense. I'm more of a spiritual sort of a person. Like I've read basically everything from the Tao to the Bible to the Quran to, and I find so many different things that, you know, that combine, that make a bigger picture on it. Like, I also believe that, like, the reincarnation sense, it's like we're sent back in each life to learn another life lesson to lead us more towards enlightenment. I know what my lesson is for this life. My lesson for this life is patience, tolerance, and acceptance. And I'm not doing too bad on it. I'm not sure how many lives I'm through. I hope I'm not getting too spiritual here, but yeah, I believe there's so much more to everything that, you know, that we don't know, that we have to open ourselves up to take it all in.
I mean, who knows how many reincarnated lives we are allowed, given, or whatever. I mean, Earth is a gigantic learning laboratory. That's what I think. And we're here, and we learn more. And I think it's just amazing. But yeah, that's there is my viewpoint on. You got any questions? I'm always up to questions.
Okay. Let's see. I'm just going to think of a good one for a second, if that's okay.
Sure.
I'd like to talk a little bit more maybe about Planet X, if you'd like to indulge in that.
Heck yeah.
Here's a question. Here's a question I'd like to pose for you.
Okay.
About Noah's Ark, say for example, how would you say, like, you know, how we've got the view of the Anunnaki with the Elohim and the Nephilim and all those guys that are in the Bible? How would you say that Noah managed to fit two of each species on the boat, and what was the actual boat?
Well, first of all, I'm not so sure that he put exactly two of each on the boat. I think that may have been more of a parable. I think he put what he needed to. You've got to remember, I've already discussed the minimum viable population. I don't know how putting two could actually work. Number one. Number two, I'm not necessarily certain it was a boat structure. It may have been a gigantic house on top of a hill. We don't know what it was. But we have clues that Noah's Ark, you know, the thing that we talk about. Ark means container. You know, there's the Ark of the Covenant. So, mm-hmm. I mean, Ark means container to begin with. So it says that Noah built a structure to house wildlife, plants, everything else. And then came the flood. And, you know, he had to have, if you think about it, it said his entire family was on there. Well, did he have 750 people? Because they were pretty much out in the wild. So I'm not saying that the story is not legitimate. I'm saying the story may have been more of a parable than it is an actual scientific fact. I don't know, but, you know, just from what I'm aware of, minimum viable population, you got to have 750 people. So, I mean, did he grab 750 people and call that the family of Noah? We don't know. But we are pretty sure that there have been major disasters, and likely about every 3,500, 3,600 years. Now, the Planet X thing gets a little iffy for me, because if there is this dwarf star called Nemesis, and it has these planets in an orbit around it, if this thing gets as close to our sun as they seem to say, well, those other planets are going to start orbiting around our sun, because the mass of our sun is so much bigger than Nemesis. I mean, that's just a reasonable fact. So I'm not sure how all this works. We may be just operating on a story, and there really may be something every 3,600 years that comes along and raises havoc. It might be a comet that's large and it gets near our Earth and starts causing problems. But I don't think you and I don't know. There may be astronomers and astrophysicists that know a lot more than we do, because they're collecting data that we don't have. But I think,
and they don't tell us about.
Pardon? And that they don't tell.
And
yeah,
that they don't.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it. If they came out with an announcement on the television that said, well, you know, a comet's going to come by the Earth and we're going to have great floods and people are going to die and the whole East Coast is going to be inundated with water, the West Coast is going to fall off. Well, I mean, it'd create complete and utter panic.
Oh, yeah.
We couldn't live
like that.
Shift
and everything.
Well, I mean, first of all, everybody, people would go crazy with worry and fear, and they'd all, you know, who knows what they would do. So they can't do that. That's not an alternative. So number two, we just kind of continue on as we go. And I've really never heard an explanation that I really understand well, because of the fact that Nemesis is supposed to be so much smaller than our sun. And if, you know, when they talk about a planet getting near us and causing massive damage, well, if a planet gets that close to us, we're going to end up with some kind of a double planet system with the Earth and whatever else, or that thing's going to find its own orbit around the sun, because our sun is so much bigger than Nemesis. Now, when I mention this to the Planet X people, they get all testy with me, because it doesn't exactly follow the Sumerian texts. But I'm just saying, as someone that knows a little bit about astronomy, a little bit about astrophysics, some of the Planet X explanations don't seem to work for me. However, I believe that there certainly is something that comes around every 3,600 years or so. So I'm not, you know, I'm certain something happens. I don't think the explanation that we discuss is necessarily correct. How's that?
Yeah.
So yes, I believe.
Yep, that sounds
but no, I'm not. But no, I'm not sure. I'm just not sure of exactly, you know, really what is it, and how does it work.
Yep.
So if someone wants to shoot me an email, awstamey@gmail.com, I'd love to hear what you've got to say. I mean, I've got the Zachariah Sitchin books. I've got all four of them, and I've read them, and they're wonderful. And I think you did a great job. Real tomes of knowledge they are, but I don't quite get it. So maybe we can get an astrophysicist on here.
I have something else to throw at you. Like they say that, like when you look at the Anunnaki, that early hominids were genetically modified to be able to work for the Anunnaki, yeah? As the story goes. If they could genetically modify people back then to a higher level, who's to say that Noah's Ark, that was a floating ship, was it floating on water or was it floating in the air? Who's to say they couldn't have just taken the DNA strands of each animal, stored the DNA strands, therefore they could put two of every species on the Ark, and then when the water subsided, they cloned them? What would be your view on that?
Well, again, I don't know how that would work in this sense. If you've got DNA and you start cloning, you're going to have to clone, again, a relatively large population. You know, you've got to clone enough. You can't just clone a male and a female and then let them have children. And, I mean, the whole thing could end. So I don't know how that works. I think the fly in the ointment is that minimum viable population. You've got to have enough members of a species
at
for it to survive out of it. Whatever it really is. I mean, that's one estimate. There could be others. So I don't exactly know how that works. I think the concept is good. Now, you know, if Noah's Ark was a spaceship, well, in the heck, that solves a lot of problems. I mean, that takes us out of the earthly physical realm of having to, you know, if you got how many, oh, let's say you had 10,000 species, which is not nearly what we've got on this planet. If you've got all these species and you got to start cloning 750 of each one now.
That's a lot.
Again, it's a good story. But really, we need to think through it and see, well, how would it work? Now, and I got to say, it's very interesting about progress. Today, I saw a story that they can now use light, and they believe that they can create intergalactic or interstellar travel, planetary travel for sure, using light. And I thought that was a very interesting story. It said that we won't be needing all this rocket fuel the heaviness of it. We can actually do all of it with using specific design of the spaceship, the outside of the spaceship, and light. And I thought that was wonderful. I mean, that looked like, I mean, the first real advance in spacecraft since, I don't know, since 1958 or whenever Sputnik was, I mean, because Sputnik used rocket fuel.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's very interesting. I think the fact is beings who've been here previous to us have had some type of technology that is not like our clumsy rocket, you know, heavy rocket fuel engines trying to get out of the atmosphere. So again, trying to think it through, if that's what it is, if we just discovered it, or if we reverse engineered that from, you know, from a space crash, or if we were given that technology that we just found out about today. Now, you know, if we found out about it today and it was at Caltech, you know that they've known about it for years. And we're like getting the we're last on the food chain when it comes to the information. So don't if you're listening out there, don't think that we're the first people to hear about this. We're the last people to hear about it. And again, we need to think all that through and talk to some futurists that are willing to like look at the Noah's Ark thing and say, I mean, how did we get all the species back? You know, they're going on. There's a great song by the band The Cow Sills from the 60s, Two by Two Entering Noah's Ark. But that's not going to be able to reproduce the entire worldly population. So it's like, I don't know. We need to think about that. And these are good questions. These are questions that people don't like to talk about. And when I mention them, they go, ooh, I don't know. Let's go get an ice cream cone. So these are good questions, and I hope people will think about them. Get back to us. Let's talk about them. I mean, I think it's very important. I don't want to dwell on that topic too much, but I mean, you know, it's just a fact. Let's talk about how would it really work. Let's try to think through all the logistics, because logistics, you know, it's like what do they say, the statement I was thinking of, but the fact is there's always problems. If you take a parable or a story that's so simple, problems in actually making it work. So that's what I've got to say. And that may upset some people, but that's all right. I've been upset before too. So yeah. In fact, in the article, the Bigfoot column, I think, this might be an interesting note to close on. Let me just read this and see what you think. I would surmise in this short article, which is the Bigfoot column, it's one of the first in the field of paranormal punditry. A pundit describes an expert in a particular subject who is frequently called on to give opinions about that subject to the public. You know? So, I mean, if you're going to be a pundit, let's try to be as accurate as we can be and like give an opinion. Well, is Noah's Ark real? I think the idea of a boat and two each of each species with all the species on there and just two, what happens if the male of the species dies, then you lose the species. So I think the planning for Noah was better than that. You know, it can't quite work. It's a good story. It's a great story. But the actual implementation was likely different.
Yep.
So, and I'll just say, you know, but if you want to be a pundit, a paranormal pundit, I think you have to think about things like this. You have to say, well, how could it have really worked based on what we know? I mean, it's like I use that idea of minimum viable population to basically say, well, there must be something called portals. And that's where all the critters hide. There must be. So
the way I see it, if we didn't have people like Galileo and other great minds, then we wouldn't know half the stuff we know now.
Well, just remember Galileo was tortured for what he knew, and you know, the church didn't like Galileo.
I know.
So.
But still, he was willing to speak his mind. and put his ideas out there. Because he was
that's
a thinker,
right.
You know what I mean? Like he thought outside
that's
the
right.
box.
That's right. Well, he really thought outside the box. Now I want to tell you that, and that's why he got in trouble. But he finally managed to get out of trouble. He continued, and thank you, Galileo and Copernicus, and all the great people
that have made
advances in science. But let's try to be realistic about things, and that can lead us, I believe, to some different and better conclusions. And so, Jackson, as we wind down for ScaryCast this evening, I want to say thank you. And will you be back with me next Tuesday night at 11 Eastern
Most
time
definitely.
For Paranormal Down Under? Okay, that's great.
Yep.
I went over a lot of work and a lot of Comic-Cons that I had to go to and everything. And sometimes old making a living gets in a way with what we love to do. But I want to thank you for being on ScaryCast with me tonight. Now, next week on ScaryCast, we'll have Angelia Sherry, who's the executive director of Tennessee. And I'm going to ask her some of these tough questions. I'm sure she'll probably listen to this episode. I'm going to ask her some of these tough questions. How do we really make these things work? And I think it takes some ingenuity. It takes some what I call real science and not just, you know, saying, oh, we just figured out that UFOs are real. I just think that's nonsense. I put that post up on ScaryCast on the Facebook page so that I would have it to discuss with her when she gets on here. So I think that'll be a good one. So anyway, Jackson, you have a good week. Thank you very much. I'm doing my best to have a good week. I will be at the Charlotte Comic Con this coming Sunday with Cody and Carolina Caricatures. We will be on the back wall. Papa Stroh will be at the front wall. The celebrities and Greg Bo Watson, our buddy, the great artist for Zenoscope that also does work for Marvel and for DC. He will be in the middle. So we'll have everything covered, and we'll see you. And Jackson, thanks a lot. And we'll see you and I. We'll get together next Tuesday right around this time for Paranormal Down Under. Sound good?
Most definitely. That sounds brilliant, my friend. Yep. Thank
all
you
right.
very much for having me on. Yep, for
always.
The great conversation today. And I'll say hello and goodbye to all of our viewers out there. And I hope you have a wonderful week. I'm looking forward to next Tuesday, mate.
Well,
sure.
I am too, and we'll get some things cooked up for then. Thanks a lot, Jackson. Everybody, Devin Papastrow. We'll see you next week. Have a good one. I love all of you. Take care. Bye bye.
See you all.